So thank you everyone. We have a new friend today, Robert Broad. Your name is Deborah?
Yes.
So welcome to our small group.
Thank you.
We come and study a little bit of the practice of the teaching of the Buddha. Mm-hmm. And then we practice together. And several activities we will have together about a few hours every Tuesday. So if you have time or you interest, you are welcome. But it is good that if you're able to keep it up, because we have class constantly, so we study different. My purpose is to help up you know all the foundations of teaching Buddhism. So when you lay out the foundations for you, so wherever you go, you know, you can carry with you. So we have built a strong foundations of studies of the teaching of the Buddha. So we start from very basics teaching of the Buddha, like three refuges, the five trainings, and slowly we move up the ladder. It doesn't mean that the basic teachings contain all the highest teachings. Once we are able to penetrate the teachings, then you're able to realize that the basic teaching is the most crucial, essential teachings. That's lay the foundations so that we can make a solid step. So without that foundations, if you want to study the highest teachings and you lack the foundation, you will not walk on the path very long, because you like walk on air every time and easy to fall down very easily.
Yes.
And it's not very practical. The important thing is to able to apply in our everyday life and get some transformations. That's the important. What all of his 45 years of the Buddha is, he don't try to teach us something a theory. You know, like many of his disciples ask him superior questions, but he never answered. He said, "I will not help you. I can tell you about everything, you know, other universals, but it will not help you in your transformation on the path. So what I teach you is for you to transform your suffering." And that's the Buddha intention message to us for his 45 years. He know his one story, he say that what I know is like forest, but what I teach you is like a handful of leaf. Because I just to try to transmit to you to the essentials of the practice. So once you're able to get roots into the essential practice, you will discover all those metaphysical stuff. But you will know later on that. But if you have a good foundation, a strong foundation, then you will walk solidly on the path and you will never fall. But if you only want to know the metaphysical teachings, you will be easily fall into the trap of ego, and you will cause more suffering. So we have to, when we study the teachings, we have to know the roots of the teachings. So that's why my intention is to just lay out the foundation for you, and you have to discover for yourself. I cannot experience the teaching for you, you know. And even the Buddha cannot experience the teaching for us. We have to experience the teaching for ourselves, taste the teaching for ourselves. The Buddha can tell us how to cook food, but he cannot eat for us. Right? Mm-hmm. I have been studying with many teachers. That's why you see that many teachers come here. I study many teachers. I know that they cannot work for me, and they cannot experience the teaching, and they cannot transform the suffering for me. I have to work for myself, but I need them, in, you know, like just like the child when they just born, they need the parents. So the baby just come out of the mother's womb, but then later on he have to work for himself. Mm-hmm. He have to learn and work for himself. The parents cannot work for him. You know, life will do something for him. He has some wrinkle in his forehead, and he have to experience life himself and walk and experience that. and enlighten himself for that. But the parents have to guide him at the beginning, give us some guidance. So the Buddha did the same thing, is he gave it guidance to walk on the path. So whether we want to walk or not, it's up to us. It's up to us. So that's why many teachers exist in the realm of samsara here. But it's up to us to come to him and take the guidance and go home and apply. That's what, and then that is whether we want to transform ourselves or not, whether we want to apply that guidance or not, is up to us. The teacher, even the teachers say a million things, you know, without, you know, saying, you know, run out of his saliva, but we never, if we don't apply the teaching, we will suffering all the time. So that's why when I was in Pumbalist, they say that, you know, I am just a guider, and I can be a communist too, you know. Don't let me tell you whatever, you know, everything. You have to investigate and apply it. So I get that message, and I leave him, leave the net, you know, and practice, and develop you know, solid practice for ourselves. So this is the same thing for all of us here. We come here, I share you with my experience with the teachings and with my experience in the practice. Doesn't mean that I transform the suffering for you or I transform some difficulty for you. No, I cannot do that for you. You see what I go through as you see what I have told you, and then you take that and apply. And apply here, you have to contemplate. So the word contemplate in Buddhism, reflecting in the teaching of the Buddha, is very important. So we have to reflect on the teachings. We have to reflect on our difficulties. Without reflecting and without putting into the teaching into applications, well, nothing will be changed in our mind, in our body. So, and we have to know the teachings always new, you know, teachings of the Buddha are always new. But sometimes we get bored of it, we get tired of the teachings. So we have to know how to renew the teachings inside ourselves. You know, like, for example, we study the Four Noble Truths. It's always there, it's always there. But sometimes it gets very boring, sometimes it gets very carried out. So as a practitioner, we have to investigate, we have to make it new, so that make it interesting. It's up to us to make it interesting for our practice. So we make our practice new and interesting every time. The tool for doing that is to contemplate. And once we contemplate, when we able to permeate the teachings, and then every moment is new, and every moment is an interesting moment to investigate. So today I just, you know, last few months we have been practicing for many time with each other. So I just want to renew your practice. Ask. Otherwise you get boring. Sometimes I teach but you don't apply it well. So you get boring in your practice, in your sittings, in your way of everyday life activity. We forget and we make it boring for ourselves. And then we lost our interest in the path. So today I just would like to ask how your practice. Everyone of you, tell me something. How is your practice? That's why if you go to like in 10-day retreats, at the end of the day you go to see the teacher. See the teacher, and he or she will sit there and listen to you, and you revere to him. What is your difficulty, and what is your improvement in the practice? What is new for you in the practice? So in that 10-day retreat, every day, at least one time, you go to one time a day. You go to the teacher, just one by one. It's a private consultation, and you go to the teacher, and he just sit there and ask. Sometimes he asks you a question, sometimes he tell, and you tell him. What is your difficulties? and he just give you a little bit of hints or advice so that you go back and practice again. So in that 10 days, you don't talk. You talk to yourself, like silently, noble silence. You practice noble silence. And it's time for you to go back, really go back to yourself. And you might be struggle a lot. A lot of emotions coming up. When I was in Sambala Mountain Center, at Naropa, and we went for a whole month retreat. And we have about 180 students. And a lot of, and we mostly, the retreat is quiet. And when we sit in a group, and a lot of people cry, and they cry so crazy, loud, and a lot of emotions, because when they sit silent, a lot of difficulty coming back. And many people get emotions in the practice. And at the moment is everybody was silent. The atmosphere was so intense because a lot of radiation of emotions, of afflictions, of difficulty in family life. And the silent environment allows the space for them to heal. And at the end of the day, and they come to see the teacher and share their difficulties and let the emotion out. And just the same thing when we come here, sometimes we sit in silence, but we don't have much time to encounter one-on-one. And sometimes we let it go too long and the practice gets boring, because sometimes you have difficulty but you don't know. Maybe you encounter a difficult breath, for example. Your breath is too long, too short, or you got some painful in your chest, and I didn't have a chance to share with you, and that's sometimes you apply the teaching, but you might apply it right, but you might encounter some difficulty while you're doing that, so today I just would like to hear some of y'all, how you practice, how you're sitting. You're just sitting. Sometimes I need to go and check your posture too, because if you sit, your physical posture also is correlated with your breath, your breathing too. Because if you sit in a such a short posture, your breathing might be flow well, but if you sit in too much, lean back, or to slouch outside backward, and your breath will be totally different. And in the long run, it's going affecting your practice. Affecting the way of your breathing, affecting the way that how you contemplate your mind and your body. So once in a while, the teacher have to check the student. Sometimes they call in one by one, and sometimes we can call. We discuss as a group, so we call collective discussion. Everybody able to share their difficulty, and then everyone learn. And then just one person say, "Oh, this is what my difficulty is," and the other people might encounter the same difficulty. They say, it's a moment of realization. So you don't say that, this is my problem or my difficulty is alone by myself. But there's also other people. But because they didn't have a chance to discuss or to speak out loud. And so today I just want to check with you, how is your sittings and how is your practice? How is your everyday life? How you apply that in your everyday life? For example, or when you come in the morning, how is your practice in the morning? So as a practice, I encourage you every morning you spend some time, a few minutes, maybe 5 or 10 minutes at least, to sit down and start your day, start out your day by cultivating some kind of loving kindness. Because loving kindness is protecting you. It's the most powerful weapons that can protect for your whole life. I'll tell you the story, and then I will ask you. There's a story in the Buddhist course, and there's a man. He practiced loving kindness, a bodhisattva, and he practiced that. Loving kindness all the time, all the time. And one day, he was going to the river, to the lake, to take a shower. And there's a man, a hunting man, kill him by, shot him, arrow him, mistakenly. And this person asked, and another person asked, why? Because he's a bodhisattva, and he practiced constantly in loving kindness. And the Buddha say that if whoever been practicing loving kindness constantly, they've been protected by that energy. So why is this man getting shot? And one of his friends, bodhisattva, say that, you know, because at that moment he was not practicing, because not all the time, because he was forget how to the practice of loving kindness. That's what at that just at that moment he got shot by the arrow. So the story tells us that you know, some, even though we practice love and kindness, but because we as a samsara human being, you know, so sometimes we forget, you know. So my point here is to encourage you to practice love and kindness in your life. So for myself, I've been practicing that, and I think that's been the most powerful protection for us in every moment of our life. There is no weapon can kill that, can destroy that love and kindness. Because once you practice love and kindness, that energy is around you. The energy of protection is always, love and kindness always around you. So you've been protected by that in not being seen, but you've been protected by that. So every morning you get up and practice some, generate some love and kindness, give rise to love and kindness to all sentient beings and to yourself. And that is your day. You start out, generate love and kindness, give rise love and kindness to all sentient beings. Even the ants, they need love. Even the animals. Sentient beings need love, but also sentient beings here include all animal realms need love. And you can see the tiger. Yesterday I see the channel, animal channel, plenty. And you can see it's the tiger, you know, when they kill all other animals, but they protect their newborn, they carry by the mouth, you know. I see that. See, the animal, all other animals, they kill for their food, but they don't kill the children, the mothers. But the tiger father different. They kill the baby, the tiger father. But the mother never. Because mother here is the symbolic of love. See? And never kill their newborn. Even in all situations, the mothers give rise to love and to protect her child. So even the animal, they know how to generate love for it. So we are sentient beings. That's why you know, in the Heart Sutra is the sutra of mother of love. Heart Sutra. All Buddhas born from the Heart Sutra, which means the Buddha born from love. All Buddhas. So we have to renew our love in every moment of our breath. When we have, we give rise to the bodhicitta of love, the mind of love, then we are safe. We feel healing at that moment right away. Because love is the best medicine to heal all wounds, you see. Once the child is ill, but the mother just put the hand on the mother, on the child's head, and the child get stop her or his cry right away, healing right away. So once we have the love in our heart, then we have the healing in ourselves, the wounds in our heart. So the practice is the practice to generate the love from our heart. When we have that, while we are protected. But we have to renew that all the time, because we are sentient beings. We have the tendencies to forget all the time. We live in forgetfulness all the time. That's why we are suffering. We don't know that. We have that available all the time inside us, within us. So when we forget how to love, then many causes of suffering arise. Many causes of suffering arise. Because we don't know how to love ourselves, and then that's why we cause suffering for ourselves. So last time we studied about the cause of suffering, you see, because what I'm sharing around to at this now is around the cause of suffering. Because we don't know how to love, then we cause suffering. So the practice is to give rise to love, and to once love is there, is embrace the suffering. Is embrace the suffering. And once love is there, then it's transformed the craving. You know, last time some of you would say that the one of the cause of suffering is craving. Because the absence of love, that's why we're craving for love. But that external love, external, outside us. So once we recognize the love within us, then we remove part of suffering, right away, part of suffering in us, part of the cause of suffering. Because you know that all sentient beings, we are craving for love. But what we're craving for is the craving for conditional love. Because, and once, and the conditional love is changing constantly. Conditional love is constantly changed. And once the changes take place, then we are suffering. We're suffering because we lost that. The condition is changed, no longer the same. No longer the same. So we have to recognize that, the conditional love outside always. So every one of us, we have the unconditional love within us. We have to recognize that and cultivate that in us. And then everywhere we go, then we have that love. And then we don't suffer, we don't craving for the external. So where are we running outside for? We are running for some, try to get hold of some things that we think that can satisfy our love. Where are we running for look for a partner? Because you think you're lacking. Right? We think that we are lacking. So we have to take refuge in something that maybe is solid, but once the partner comes to you and you don't know how to treasure him or her, and then you got bored, boring. You got, because we don't know how to discover the internal, something that in you and in the other persons. We don't know how to do that. Nobody teaches, nobody shows us how to do that. Except the Buddha. Except some teacher. They already able to explore that, so they show us the way. Explore that. And they show us a way without any condition. You don't have to come to me or to the teacher, the Buddha, with any condition in order for him to show you something. Right? Buddha never asked anything from us. We come to him without any conditions, and he come to you, to us, without any condition. We both manifest in the sense of purity, without any conditions. So that's why when we come to the Buddha, we don't have any, the Buddha don't cause any suffering for us. But if there any suffering arise, that because of us expectation, you know, many of his disciples blame him too, right? Blame him, you know, of many of this of that, because But the Buddha never reacting, you know. But he just compassionately, authentically just show them the way so that they can discover. And slowly, if they already they discover that within themselves, and they're no longer expecting the Buddha of anything, the Buddha freely come and go. And this still is the same thing as the Buddha, the disciple, freely come and go. But children come to us in a different way, you know. Children come to us because of condition, you know. In many last life or many this life, we have owned them or they have owned us some kind of condition, their expectations, you know, from us. So that's why when children come to us, either some kind of suffering is created, between the bonds between parents and children. Many of you here have children, so I think you experience that. I don't have children, but I'm a child of my mother's and my father. So I come to my family the same thing, right? So I might not experience it as parental, but I experience as children. You know, I come to my father with some condition. And, you know, if he don't raise me properly, I might angry at him, right? And regret or feel abandoned, right? If I don't practice well, the same thing. Students come to us like that too. But if we know how to practice, we recognize our conditions and accepting it, then it's much easier for the parents and for the children. Since I come to my family, I don't expect anything from my father, my parents. Even though I was abandoned, but it's okay to be abandoned, to learn the lesson to be abandoned. And once you're abandoned, you learn how to love more, how to love other people. You have to learn the lesson. Once we learn to accept the conditions, then we don't blame in or, you know, that mock, convict.
Check me.
Uh-huh.
To be like resentful towards them.
Yeah,
right?
Resentful to our parents. And we learn to love more of them because you learn the condition meditator. They are the same condition, they are human too, you know. So we are resentful to them. And we're able to open our hand to embrace them. So same thing with you, open your hand to embrace, to raise the children and embrace them, right? And if they are lucky, they grow up to be a bodhisattva, and you'll be happy, right? Yeah, you're happy. In the Vietnamese tradition, every family, if they have some, you know, the children become monk, and they say that a lot of marriage for the family and for the lineage, for the whole ancestor, because they do a lot of good things for other people. Yes. But once you disrobe, they're not happy.
Yeah.
And they're upset, and they might be you know, look at you different eyes.
Mm.
And they don't accept you into the family too, you know. It's difficult. But see, it's difficult. So we all bonds into the human family, you know. We all big, you know, when we look at the small family, we have a small family. But we look at the bigger one, we all human family, you know, same family. So the Buddha's teaching is to open our eyes to look in that. So we remove our judgmental, our discriminations. And we're able to see the collective suffering of all sentient beings as a human family. Then we're able to transform our discriminations, our prejudiced eyes, like that. Because all humans is suffering the same thing. You, whether you're born as yellow or white or, you know, doesn't matter. We are suffering in different ways. And we all need some kind of love to heal our wounds. And so it's the practice to open our eyes and look into the, in the, on that directions, you know. And open our hand to embrace all because we know that I have some suffering, you have some suffering, everyone of us have some suffering. Once we understand and penetrate the suffering and the painful of human beings, then we are open our heart. Open our hearts. That's what the Buddha enlightened is about. He opened his heart and see through the painful, the emotions, the suffering of the sentient beings. So I just want to just share you some of my thoughts on that. Because when I travel, I learn different things. I open my eyes up more and see my view will change totally of how life. And because when we travel, we encounter with different people, we're able to open our ear and listen, and our eye to look. And we learn so many lessons, So today I was thinking to see how we continue the teaching, but I was looking back, sitting and was contemplating that I should check on your practice and see how your practice, any improvement or any difficulties. The purpose of our teaching is to able to help each other to see how difficult in our practice, you know. You know that life is a practice. Our life is a practice. The whole course of life is a practice. Practice to look deeply. If we take life in that way, it's more interesting. You come in here and practice as a small group, correct? But you go back home and you practice in a family, with your family, with everyone around you. Maybe here you practice with different people with different backgrounds, but you go home, you practice with your children and your husband. Because your husband is, or your children is also sentient beings, right? All sentient beings. They need your love. They need your care. And you need their care and their love too, right? So a family is a small temple. In my small temple, so that's what I told my brother. You say that your family is a temple. Sometimes you go to the temple. That's a big temple. That's many people come together. But once you go back to your family, your children, and your wife is a Buddhist sattva for you, and it's a small temple in your house. But if you're able to practice with that temple, share your understand, share your suffering with that temple, then you go to the big temple, then it's easy. But if you're not able to share your pain, your emotions, your afflictions in that temple, and then it's impossible for you to go out in a community or in a big temple to share. Because it's so complex when you go into the big one, right? So your family is a place for you to practice first. That is very practical, because your family is the place that you go back all the time. Home. When I go out, I see the other places practice, but I go home, I go back to the temple, I feel much more comfortable. I don't know why, I feel more relaxed, and because the things around me is familiar, and this thing is there, I know where that is. But if I go to another temple, it's hard, you know. But we try to practice as our temple, but it's hard, I realize that. So I go back here, I've got more like relaxed and more healing, you know. And I know that nobody look after me, and you know, and anything, you know, and everyone come here. I just consider it as you are my practitioner, or so it's easy for me. So the same thing is a family. That's why, you know, like in Tibetan, when the teacher die, they bring back to the old place, you know. Even they recommend that in the book of dying, the Tibetan book of dying, they say that because you go back, you bring you back to the home and you're familiar and you don't feel a lot of strangers around. So it's easier to in peace for the last moon of your life. So that's why in the Western we call home sweet home, right? Mm-hmm. Home sweet home. So it's the same thing. When you study the culture, you see home sweet home is the same thing. You go back to your own temple, go back to your family. But many of us, like we run away from our family. We have suffering and we never want to go come back. And the more we go now, the more we feel a lot of isolation, a lot of suffering. Because you never feel home. You feel lost. You feel lost. It's the same thing here. What I try to talk is to go back to our practice. When we familiarize with our practice already, then you go back to your practice and then you feel like home. It's the place that you've been familiar with many days and many times in your life. You go back to your practice. For example, like breathing. I go back to the islands within myself. Is that what it is? What it is? So when we departure from our life, you go back to your practice. And that's where you familiarize yourself. And it's easy and it's like comfort. More comfortable. More comfortable. So we familiarize ourselves with our practice. For example, like breathing, or counting your breath, or in Pure Land they practice reciting the Amitabha Buddha's name. So once the moment that they pass away, everybody recites the name of the Buddha, and that's the place they're going back. And they feel comfortable, they feel safe, they feel not isolated. And that is the moment of peaceful calm. And once we are at peace and we are calm, we know where to go. We know what place we should take. Right? So that's why every one of us want to be at our last moment in life. We want to be dwelled in a peaceful place. Peaceful place for us. That's what the practice prepare for us. Prepare for our peaceful place. So how's your practice mapped? How's your sitting?
I guess I try to measure my practice more of everyday events, mm-hmm. more so than, you know, just like a sitting exercise. I guess one example of a real world event is I was driving down the highway and this like tool, a wrench or something, came out of this trailer and hit my car and damaged my windshield. And I know a year ago I would have called them like 10 times and like wanted to help find them like accountable and, you know, make them suffer because I suffered and had to deal with getting it fixed and the insurance company and, you know, driving to Denver to get it fixed and all that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now I'm able to just let it go and not lose sleep over it for days. I think that's one example of being able to let go and not try to make other people suffer because I thought I was suffering.
Mm. Yeah. So without the practice, we have the tendencies of ours, and means we have when we suffer, we try to make a friend suffer too, so we have a partner. We have partners, so that's why we revenge. So how is your sitting? Is there any painful, any stiffness in your sitting, anything like that?
No, I wouldn't say there's pain or stiffness. I think it'd be nice to move away from the bench and be able to do like the half lotus, but I guess I'm not quite sure how to get from here to there. You know, without being attached to the bench.
So you have to be mindful of your attachment on the bed.
I am mindful.
Okay. Yeah. So you have to a certain way that you to know your practice, to measure your practice. You know, how is that? Just the example, message, I think it's very concrete. You know, through the things that happen around us, and we sit back and see many years ago if that situation was happened to us, how are we going to react to that? And now, how are we going to react to that? And it's reflecting our practice, the calmness, the clearness to see the situation, to penetrate the situations. So how's your practice, Cindy?
It's okay.
Yeah. How are you sitting?
It's okay. I still struggle with intellectually agreeing with Tai and understanding what he's saying, but I don't feel it in my heart. You know, I agree what he says. I know it's true, but I don't want to do it. You know, even though I agree with what he says, but at least I make the step to make an effort to do it, even though I don't feel like I want to. Yeah. A couple weeks ago, I told Tai that I was really upset at my mom. I usually call her every day, and I hadn't called her for a week. And then after I heard Tai's Dharma talk, I picked up the phone and I called her, even though I was still upset. You know, but it was good that I, you know, made the first step. So.
There's nothing wrong to react right, or, you know, but to know that is the matter, is to know that you are reacting, and slowly you can see and penetrate that, you know. Because we have many lifetimes, we have accumulated a lot of habit energy. So if things, just one thing, is not going to in accordance to our intentions, then we react right away. But it's okay to react, but just to know it, that you react, and how you feel, how your feelings is going at that moment. And slowly, it's not a day or two to remove that, to transform that feeling, right? It's not. Many lifetimes we already have that habit already. So we have to let the time and let the teaching do the transformation, but it takes some time, you know. The fruits, when the other fruit is not ripe in the right way, it takes many days and many months for the fruit to ripe. So the same thing is the practice. So when we know it, and the intensity slowly remove of that. So that's why mindfulness is important to know that. Many people, they don't know that. And if we don't know that, and the more we think about that, the stronger the habit, the energy gets stronger, because it's nourishing that. But if we notice it, we are mindful of that, and slowly that go away. But no, it takes some time.
That's exactly what I feel. I was just going crazy in my mind, and I'm reading Tai Yathang's book, The Heart of Buddha's Teaching, and it talks about habit energy and your habit energy pulling you into a fire pit. And I know that it's pulling me, but I don't know why. It's hard to let go of it. Like, why am I going crazy? You know, I know what I'm supposed to do, but I just still feel the habit energy pulling me.
So at that moment, you take a few deep breaths, and you know, and maybe take a walk, you know, something to calm that energy down, and see. Once we see that, and it slowly. You call the word pacify. Slowly. The matter we see it or not. The enlightened one is they see it right away when it's come, and they don't act on it. But the ignorance, and if we are not mindful, and then we act on that, and that means we are putting more gas into that. And it's burning, intensely burn. So that's the difference, you know, the enlightened one, they see it's right where it arises, it's calm, and it sees. But they don't act upon it, and they don't accumulate. The karmic action sees. Sees. Steve, how your practice?
This is actually a very interesting time for my practice right now, and I've appreciated this talk because it's pulled a lot of things together in my head. In May, I was really pleased with the progress I had made in my sitting meditation. Mm-hmm. I was able to make large commitments of time mm-hmm. in the day to sit. And that completely changed in June mm-hmm. When I started a new job. And so there was an attempt to try to figure out how to maintain that. And I realized very quickly that I didn't have the skill, like the ability, mm-hmm. to get to the same place that I could in sitting meditation mm-hmm. that I could driving a truck mm-hmm. or dealing just in day-to-day. So, you know, obviously there's frustration there and the chance to look at that frustration. And that persisted throughout the summer until about 2 weeks ago when I finally had a week off. I was taking a week off between my summer job and my teaching job, and I was going to recommit myself to sitting, and that was going to be kind of my time to get myself back into it. And the day after I made that commitment, and a few days before that began, my grandmother passed away, so I had to travel back with my family. But looking back now, I'm more grateful that I actually didn't have that time on the cushion, because I think I learned more about my practice in the world dealing with that and looking deeply at that, making a commitment to look at that. And then a week later, we had someone new come into our lives. And that was on a Tuesday night, so I was looking forward to coming to Sangha again. But on that Tuesday, we were with our family, and that was really interesting. And finally, at the beginning of I've been onto my normal routine again, and I've now found that it's nowhere near the same practice I had in May that I have right now. There's some things I'm definitely rusty at. It's much more difficult for me to quiet myself down.
Mm-hmm.
With no judgment, a pure observation. Mm-hmm. I can very clearly see that. I've changed my posture. I'm actually trying to sit in half lotus mm-hmm. instead of with both legs on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's incredibly painful.
Mm.
it's just all very, very different. So I'm trying to approach it as a novice coming into it again without any expectations, and just meeting it again. But it's been very interesting and difficult at times, and rewarding at times, to be able to look back and see all that path.
Mm-hmm. Good. So three things important, like
in Buddhism. So what you thought is learning, reflecting, and acting. This is the basics tool, tool for practicing.
So we learn, and then we reflect. So what you have done is you learn and you reflect and put into applications. Learning, reflecting, and practicing. That's three tools for the beginning. We have, so learning here, we in Buddhism we call listening. Listening is a part of learning. Listening to the teachings, and then reflecting. Reflecting through our daily life, you know. Anything that coming up in our life, what we learn, and now we have to reflect and contemplate. Reflect here is like contemplating, you know. And then put into applications is to really authentically carry out the practice. And once the practice is important, once you put into applications, then you experience the teachings. whether that, you know, what you have learned which is truth or not. You know, it's really, so that's three tools that we can, and there's a way that we can measure our practice. Sorry. For ourselves, and we can look at others and look at ourselves and measure our practice before, at the moment, and you know, and there's things going on in our life. So your sitting posture is okay, right?
Yeah, I've developed a rather large bruise from my foot, you know, on top of my thigh.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been interesting.
Yeah.
It's been a little tender getting into that posture. I feel it's a very stable posture. It's actually an incredibly comfortable posture.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of minutes into it, it feels very grounding.
Yeah.
But about 30 minutes in, I get to work with the pain and the suffering that comes with it.
Yeah. So practice is like experience. When you go to school and you take a lap, for example, and we do a lap, so we experience what we have learned the theory. So the same thing is like practicing. So when you, for example, like Steve, he used the postures as part of the experience for his physical, and we have to know what we go through. There's painful, which is recognize that it's painful, so we don't have to resist to it. You know, the more we resist, the more it get painful, and the more we relax, because once the body relax, the mind also relax, and the painful slowly dissipate. When I was first meditate, I tried to meditate 2 hours, and I so pain, I cry. I cry and I say, oh, my body, I tell myself that, oh, this body is going to die anyway. Better die now. and then after 2 hours, and I feel so light, you know, the body, and feels so light and so peaceful after the painful go away, you know, after 2 hours. And from that on, I sit much less pain, you know, much less, 2 hours. and I feel more like enjoy sitting. So how's your practice, Elaine?
Depends on which part.
Which part?
Unlike you, I know the teachings up here, but putting them together with my heart is difficult.
Mm.
I can analyze and justify 24/7, you know, forever, but I don't feel it in my heart. So since I started this practice, I figured, well, just don't worry about it, don't think about it, just let it happen, it'll evolve eventually. So that's kind of what I do with it, with the teachings. I read it, but I try not to get caught up in it, in my head.
Mm.
I've always been in my head. I think about things, I analyze things, I rationalize things. It's enough to drive me crazy. So I've gotten to the point where I don't do that so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't feel it.
In your heart.
Yeah. Which kind of takes me back to what you were saying earlier about, well, if our parents aren't great, they're still our parents and we still feel for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of took me back to when I was young, and the thought that came into my head was, yeah, but as a child you learn not to trust if you don't get unconditional love.
Mm.
And so it kind of brought up that memory for me that in my family, most of the time, there were conditions on love all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I could depend on was it was always going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And today it was going to be one thing, tomorrow it would be something else, next week it would be something else, the day before it was totally different. But I could always count on it being different.
Hmm.
And so I learned not to trust people,
hmm.
to only trust myself. And so that's something that I have to work with too. And the older we get, the harder it is, because the habit energy is so strong.
Mm-hmm.
But through this practice, I find myself softening.
Mm.
I'm just not pushing myself. Because if I push myself, I get too much in my head.
Mm.
So for me, that's a benefit to just not do that. As far as my sitting, sitting is not, my sitting isn't real good. I get very restless.
Mm.
I get very, I can do it here.
Mm.
You could have us sit all day long, I'd be fine, with a group of other people, but by myself, 5 minutes, okay, I've had enough. My body's just, I'm all over the place, my aches. I can't sit in a half lotus because my back aches.
Mm.
I can only sit in a half lotus if I can lean against a wall, which is why I use a bench.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no interest to get off the bench. When I signed up for this Vipassana retreat, they called me and they asked me if I had any preconceived notions about it.
Mm.
And I said, how could I? I've never been to one. You've heard from other people. Yes, I've heard other people talk about them.
Mm.
But I have no idea what to expect, so I'm not going with any expectation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking my bench and I'm taking my cushion because I don't know which one they're going to let me sit on. So I figured I'd take both of them and try them out or not. I don't know. Even as a child, I was never able to sit cross-legged.
Mm.
So that's always been, the way my hips are developed. So it took me 3 years practicing 5 days a week to get into a half lotus when I was in my 30s, late 20s, early 30s. But as I've gotten older, I've lost that.
Mm.
I think it'd be nice to get back to it, but I don't know, I like my bench. I'm not attached to it, but I because I'll kneel on a cushion, but my hips bother
me. Okay.
So.
Okay. Yeah, good. So the practice is to know our body and our mind, the conditions of the body and the mind. And what is after the practice, after, for example, after a scene of, a session of sitting, how do you feel about that? Means you have some peaceful movement in your sitting? Mm-hmm. Or in some clarity? Clarity and some calmness. So if the condition of your body or the way that your structure of your body, you know, it might be different from other people. So that's why we say, that's why awareness is coming in, to see, to know the body and the mind. So if your body is too painful for cross leg or half lotus, then you can sit other style to. But it's the important is while you sit, is there any clarity in your mind? Clarity in your mind, and some kind of lineness while after you sit. So that kind of it can nourish you for your sittings. So if you have some clarity, some peaceful, and it's interesting. And, if your mind is clarity, you can see what the condition of your body are at that moment, and you know how to fix it right away. Fix it. Because you have the calmness to see it, the insight to see the situation of your body. So sitting is just one means to bring you into concentrations, into calmness. But throughout our day of life, you can walk, can lie down, you can do many other things. But while you do that, is there any calmness, clarity in your reactions? So that's some kind of measurement for you to see on through your practice. You know, like for example, you know, we have some, when I was in Howard, we have some handicapped people come and they sit on a chair. Their body was not structured as us. So we have to instruct them to sit in a way that they, you know, to calm the body and the mind. Not all people, not all the practitioners are able to sit on cushion. Many mature friends cannot sit because their body is too rigid. Mm-hmm. You know? To sit lotus or full lotus, you have to be very when you practice when you're young. It's easier. It's, your body is more flexible. Your bone is more bendable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's easier. But when you get a little bit slowly, you get mature on the process, on the path, then you have to know your body. So the practice is to get to know your body and your mind. And once you know your body and your mind, you know what to do with it, so that you get some concentration, some peace while you're doing that. The purpose is to have some peace in your mind and clarity in your mind. And your rest in your body, because you know that sitting is Buddha, but he also walking is also Buddha, you know, eating also Buddha, you know, because he eat with clarity, he sit he walk with clarity, he do work with clarity, then with awareness, then he's whatever he does, he's the Buddha. So if you do whatever you do, if you have that, you are Buddha. You are the Buddha. You want to be a Buddha, part-time Buddha, or you want to be full-time Buddha, you have the choice. Mm-hmm. You say that, oh, you know, part-time Buddha is more fun. then you choose to be a part-time Buddha. Some people, they dwell in suffering, and they say, oh, suffering also sometimes is blissful too. And, like taking drugs, right? But after you take drugs, you feel the painful. Right? But while you are taking drugs, you say, "Oh man, it's so blissful," right? But after that, you feel so much painful for that, so much craving for that. So how's your practice? You've been practice for many time for a while. So we can also share some of your insights with us.
I think right now that my practice is pretty strong.
Strong.
I mentioned that I did this 30-day retreat.
Mm-hmm.
In Thailand, and I would say before that I just about lost my practice.
Mm.
I was going through some very difficult times, but I made this decision to do this retreat.
Mm.
And my practice has changed a lot in the last year. I was a Vajrayana practitioner.
Vajrayana.
Mm-hmm. And so in the last year I began to study the Anapanasati.
Mm.
And working with my breath more.
Mm.
So when I was done with the 30-day retreat, we were sitting about 6 hours a day, not consecutively, it was split up, but I'd learned that after the first horrible experience of the first part of it, that it became,
mm-hmm.
as you say, comfortable and natural.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it felt like the place, like when I would return to the cushion, it would be the place I'd left. I mean, exactly the place I'd left in many ways.
Mm.
I had a little bit of time after the retreat, so I stayed on in that same place and would practice 2 or 3 hours a day. But then I went to stay with my daughter, who had a baby a day and a half later.
Mm.
And I had jet lag and a 3-year-old grandson, mm-hmm. and many people who came to stay at the house while I was there for 2 months helping them.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of lost the time period I was sitting in,
mm-hmm.
but I found that my mind was much calmer than it had been.
Mm.
That my breath
was really important to me, that if I took the time to recognize what was happening with my breath, mm-hmm. and I began to breathe again in a deep way, in the longer breath, I could really be right where I was at.
Mm.
And so at the moment, I am in a real state of flux without a car or a home or a few other things I'd like to have that I could get have gotten attached to. But I don't feel afraid.
Mm. You have a place of a refuge in your practice.
Yes. Mm. Yes, I feel like I do. And so I'm trying to make time each day to have anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour where I do really sit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to stabilize my lifestyle pretty soon so that I can make more time.
Mm.
But as far as my posture goes, I feel like my right leg, particularly my right knee, hurts. I've never practiced on a bench before. Mm. I've always used a cushion.
Mm-hmm.
But my right leg has really been, and it could be my age, the grandmotherly age, doing something to me. But, in general, it feels stable. I really like how it feels to just really subtly adjust my body so that it's very erect and sort of supple but erect, and it feels good that way.
Mm. Yeah, it's important to sit relaxed but erect,
mm-hmm.
because your breath, easy for the breath to flow in and out,
mm-hmm.
and... in the long run, it's really affecting your health. Mm. Mm. And it's really helped you to get back your energies in the day, in a long day of working.
Mm.
I felt that in myself for many years, that sometimes I work a lot, but just a couple, 15 or 20 minutes, able to relax and just pay attention to the breath. You know, and really aware of it, and the energies recover, you know, tremendously. And so you practice and you will know that for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We have to really pay attention to our practice, and you know. Good, thank you. Let's end that with us. Wendy, how's your practice?
It's interesting right now. My practice right now has a lot to do with looking deeply into fear and anxiety. I've struggled with that for a long time in my life and have suffered quite a bit. And I've been working with a doctor and I've been on medication. But recently, since my life has changed so much with the practice and things are just going really well, I've decided to get off my medication, which has been kind of frightening. But I'm slowly decreasing it, and I'm realizing, I was talking to Steve about this the other day, that the fear still comes up, but I have ways to deal with it.
Mm.
And that's what's exciting for me right now. So I'm trying to look deeply at that and not judge it and say, it might come up, you know, it might be there, but that doesn't mean I have to stumble into this path of, oh my gosh, what's happening? I'm, you know, freaking out or whatever. So I've been looking deeply at that, and with my sister's baby just arriving, I've had many opportunities to, especially my mom. My mom is a wonderful woman, but she's very nervous.
Mm.
And the day of the birth, my sister's labor was very fast, and I was working. And when my mom first called, she said, oh, it could be 8 to 10 hours, whatever. And then all of a sudden she called me back, frantic, you have to come right now. I said, Mom, I have some commitments, some things I need to take care of. I mean, I'm taking care of a 6-month-old for my job, and can't just leave. And, you know, I had some things to do, and so I didn't make it for the birth, but I was really happy with how I dealt with it. I was very calm, and I felt myself kind of starting to get anxious as my mom, you know, was very frantic. And I also could understand where she was coming from. I mean, she's not always skillful, and, you know, when I got there, she said, you should have been here. And then Steve helped me to understand it was more, she wanted to share that with me, and so I can see it from her perspective and not get defensive about that. So.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of deep looking. In terms of practice on my cushion, it's been good. I very naturally sit in full lotus. My mom said actually I did when I was a baby. I know that sounds really weird, but like in my high chair, my hips are just that way. I don't know. But it is. But I can only do that for a certain amount of time. And so what I'm trying to do, I actually remembered Papa on the first time he came to speak. He was talking about pain because, remember, he had all those back problems, and he said something to me that just keeps coming up in my sitting, and that is to look at that fear, and I mean to look at that pain, and if there's no fear attached to it, then it can't be strong and powerful. So that's what I try to do when my legs are really, really hurting. I'll just look into that and say, there's nothing to be afraid of. You know, it might hurt a little bit, but I can deal with this for a little longer. So that's where I am right now.
Good. Yeah. Yes, the pain that I have recently, I work a lot and my back so hurt that, you know, the day sometimes I couldn't move, you know, when I sit down and then it's so stiff. So stiff. But I don't get it. If there should be a lot of fear too, because I don't know how I handle this. But I don't know, it's magic. And I don't get any fear. I just really try to relax and relax the tensions in my backbone. And you know, at the end of the retreat, for 3 day retreat for the teenagers, at the end of that, and I still have some pain, continues, it's prolonged for several days, and I think almost a week. And then we have a Mother's Day, and then and they have a long day, and then at the end of the day, we have a tea meditation, because there's a couple who write in calligrapher, and they come and they organize the tea meditations. And I sit for 3 hours.
Wow.
3 hours, my pain was there, but I don't. And then I feel there's I recognize my pain, but it's not as painful. And I think it's because of I relax, and you know, I don't pay much attention. I know it's there, but because of not a really fear of, you know, what I'm going to do with it. And now it's very little, just like 20% left. And I'm able to do my exercise and things like that. So I think it's the thing you say is, I experience that too. You know, if we got more intense fear, and then the pain, in our body, because the mind told us, you know, and then it's even more intense, painful. But I feel lucky that I right now much less pain, and I'm able to move and practice. But I have to be careful to do heavy things, carry many heavy things, because when we do the stage, we don't have time, so I have to do quite fast and carry rocks, big boulder. Yeah, so I experienced something familiar, right? Yeah, thank you for sharing that. So I will be on the same boat. But I don't take medicines. I don't take medicines. Yeah. And then I have to take the gas to, you know, to walk up to the Rocky Mountain, and we have to walk, you know, hiking. I have to walk very slow and very mindful, making steps, every step very mindful. Eloise, how is your practice?
First of all, welcome back.
Thank you.
This is so helpful. I had a car experience too, but mine was that a truck was parked in my alley by a business, and I wanted to go in my alley from that end. I can go in from either end, and I sat in the turning third lane, waiting and waiting and waiting, feeling so frustrated and virtuous at the same time for not honking my horn and doing that. And then I realized there is another end of the alley. So I drove around the block and came in the other way. And in listening to Matt's story, I realized I was so involved with me. And I do this when I get onto a call and I'm put on hold for 10 or 15 minutes. I am furious by the time the person comes on and says, yes, I'll help you now. And it reminds me, I was pleased that I went around to the other end of the alley, went into my garage, the truck was still there. But until Matt was talking, it never occurred to me, what if the person in the truck was handling an emergency? Number one, was sitting in her little gray car. And it reminds me of how, and also on the phones, when I'm put in on hold, it's a gift to realize how often and how easy it is for me to put my needs and my concerns first. And so it's just those little reminders that really help. What you said about going back to my own island, the islands within, is helpful because sometimes I wake up in the night and I live alone, and the sort of gremlins of fear will just come in and sit all around my bed. They just fill the room. And I suddenly feel very much afraid, whether it's politics, whether it's my children, who are all healthy as can be, happy as can be, or you know what I mean, they're no apparent crises, but this sudden alone, terribly alone feeling will come to me of just utter aloneness in the dark in my little space. So what I hear you saying is breathe and go back to loving kindness in the islands within. When I sit on my cushion, I was getting bored, so I'm so glad you talked about that, because I when I can, I sit 25 minutes maybe in the morning, and I have a much better day when I do that. But I was getting a little bit bored with my breath. So I'm glad you said something about that. And sometimes one leg is beginning to fall asleep. So I give myself permission to wake it up and then to put it back. Because otherwise, this happened to me. The first time it happened was here. And I stood up, but we had one leg that I could work on. So I also, as part of my, I believe now, part of my practice, I have been doing a number of hours every day of writing. And it's about family. And I have come in that writing to, especially my father and myself, all of us, except I'm not quite as close to this point with my mother, but to really be able to get into their suffering and see at a very, very deep level that everything that they did to me, around me, in their lives, was came so directly out of their suffering. And I had not, and I found that of myself too, in the things that I've done to my children and my family that I just, I wish I hadn't done. So I think that's part of my practice too, has been this deep, deep writing.
Yeah, this help you when your mind is calm and clear, it's easy to come out, and you accept it without like resentment or whatever that is not causing, and you know, causing you suffering. When you write with a mind of calmness and love and kindness, it's important. It's help you to bring out all of that seeds into the surface. And do, and then slowly it's got some transformation from that. And another point is I want to emphasize here is like when you sit, if your leg is numb, you have to massage. That means you're practicing loving to your body. And don't stand right away. You know, if maybe I can, my body is just like, it's already get used to it, so my body might be get less numb, so I might, you know, feel the already rings there. But if you're, but if your leg is still numb, or you still feel dizzy, you just, you know, just move aside and give a little bit more love to your body by massaging it. It's important to know of this, because when we practice in the long run, we have to know our body. And if you stand in the right way, you might fall down and you paralyze. So that's why I say that it's important to really understand the positions, whether you are sitting or do something, so you know what to do. For example, if you are in a big crowd, in a big group of retreatants, and you feel embarrassed to everybody stand up and their leg is still numb, and you don't try to be the one to block the way, right? So you try to stand up, and you fall down, and at that moment you can be paralyzed because your body is not reacting. It's not showing. So it's important that you massage well. That's why every time that I give a few minutes, you do massage your body, and your eye, ear, nose, and your leg, especially the legs that can be very easy numbs. If you are not get used to sitting, especially you try to get into like the posture of lotus or half lotus or something like that, the legs can be very numbness in a short time. So just be careful when you sit. If you are numb, just give a well massage and a warm. That means you are practicing love toward yourself. Mm-hmm. Who else can you practice that love at that moment? If you're not able to love your body, who else can you love? If you try to say love to someone, that is mechanical. You have to love yourself in order to love others, because you understand your suffering in order to understand other people's suffering. The Buddha, he able to love everyone because he able to understand his suffering. The same thing here. He able to love himself. So that's why he able to love everybody. So we have to love our body. And once we do that, then we have the root. The root of love is to love yourself. Not here is not a selfish love. You love your body because your body is like a raft, carry you to the shore of freedom, right? So you have to know that. It doesn't mean here that you have like selfish love here. You have to love the raft while you are needed, right? But once you don't need it, then you have to let it go. Then you let it go. Because your body is just like a raft to carry you to wherever you want to go. The freedom, the liberations. So when you're able to, then you're able to carry other people. If your raft is not strong enough, you're not healthy enough, how can you carry other people? No. Right? If the Buddha's mind is not healthy, how can he help other people? Help other people's mind to see clearly. Bob, how's your practice? You feel a little bit tired today?
Right now, but this is a time of day where I often feel kind of a little nodding off, and then I come back alive again.
Okay.
But that, I was thinking how that's kind of something I've been working with my meditation lately. My consistency of meditation has been good. I've been getting in a morning and an evening sit.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed kind of the difference between what my body's doing and what my mind's doing.
Mm.
And so sometimes my body's tired and my mind isn't. Sometimes my mind's tired and my body isn't. And so I'm learning more to pay attention to that. Sometimes I'll sit down, I'll get on the cushion, and my body's feels kind of somewhat agitated, but my mind is settled and I can focus my mind.
Mm.
And then other times my body's real settled and relaxed, and then my mind's all over the place. So kind of getting a sense of the two of those working together. So I'm finding for my morning sit, I really need to, when I get up, I'm rested, but I'm also kind of stiff. So I'll do some prayers to the sun or do some exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll do my seated meditation and it goes well.
Mm.
And then for my evening sit, if I'm kind of tired, I'll sit down and it's kind of, well, this isn't going to work. So maybe I'll just lay down and do some deep relaxation for 10 minutes and just relax a little.
Mm-hmm.
And then get up and then I sit and then that goes better.
Yeah.
So, but I've been getting just a sense of what my mind's doing and what my body's doing and trying to bring those together a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I don't, but at least I have a better sense that I'm not. If that makes understand what I mean.
Yeah.
So just kind of focusing on that.
Mm-hmm. So how's your posture sitting? Is your posture
physical posture is good.
Yeah.
I don't do a full half lotus in terms of my my feet being all the way up here. Mm-hmm. More kind of in the crease of my knees, but mm-hmm. that's where I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with being comfortable.
Yeah.
So I think my seated posture is slowly getting more comfortable.
Yeah.
But the more that gets comfortable, the more my mind wanders.
Yeah.
Working on that.
Okay. Yeah, it's in the morning if you are able to get some warm up exercise, and it's really good to get your body warm up. Every morning, I do 10 or 15 minutes exercise, sometimes half an hour if I have time, to get the blood running and warm up and it's more flexibility when you sit, when you do some yoga movement or some whatever, you know, exercise that you is feasible for you. You feel that it's a help for you. And it's more like when you do exercise, it's waking you up from this, from the warm, you know, sleepy, you know. Mm-hmm. For us, you know, if we get up like early, so it's, you know, have a tendency to the mind still need more sleep. So we have to do some, we have some, if you're good, you have some hot tea. I think it's really good to have a hot tea and go to, and bring your mind. And just enjoy, really relax and enjoy the tea, you know. Take a deep breath, you know, really with your tea, with the water. And that's already meditation, you know. I mean, sometimes we do meditation in the hall, but sometimes in the morning we just sitting for 15 minutes and we do, you know, really relax and with your tea only, and get a cup of the tea at heart and massage your eye, you know, face like this. It's really help and relax all the muscle and things like that. It's really wake you up, you know. It's just a kind of massage here, and just put just do like that and just really relax your body, your physical and remove all your wrinkles. Yeah, so have some hot tea, you know, and do a few moments of exercise. And before you do your sitting, it really help and really bring you into concentration. Easy to bring you into concentrations, and your body's more flexibility. Eloise, how's your practice? Oh, sorry, Melody. So.
I've actually been doing a lot of, I guess I would call it mental work.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess just to kind of give you some background on it, but like my father's side of the family is just very dysfunctional in my eyes. Like they mm-hmm. haven't seen each other, really talked to each other in like 15 years.
Mm.
And there's just a lot of discord, and you know, and my dad especially is so, sometimes I see him like he's always kind of blaming everybody else for his problems and what other people, like he's putting his expectations on other people, and when they're not fulfilling his expectations, you know, he's just so disappointed, and he's but I see it as though he's burdening himself with that. And I saw that in myself a lot too. And like especially with my husband. You know, I would put expectations on him and you know he's never, that's unfair for me to expect that he's gonna live up to that. And you know, and I still struggle with my husband a lot.
That's okay.
But I'm aware of it. And you know, and my dad and I, we really, for a long time, we really have not had a good relationship just for things.
Mm.
Just for, you know, just how he kind of was as a parent and some things that have happened. And There's a video you all should watch, and Thich Nhat Hanh is in it. It's called The Power of Forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I watched that, and it inspired me to write him a letter
mm-hmm.
about a lot of the things that I have allowed myself to be weighed down with. And, you know, and you know, I wrote that letter, and I mean, I was just, I was up for hours into the night, and I was just sobbing, and, you know, and I burned it, and I can't tell you what, like, a release that was, and how I can look at him, and I can smile at him, and I can say, you know, I forgive you, and I really love you, and I'm not going to hold those things anymore, because it's futile. And like another example, I was visiting, my father's mother passed away in June, and then my mother's mother, she has just, she doesn't have Alzheimer's, but she has dementia, you know, she's dementia's getting really bad, and so she would stay with me a couple days a week, and she actually ended up getting a really bad bladder infection. She had to be hospitalized, and she's pretty much been in and out of the hospital or nursing homes, and so anyhow, I went to go visit her on a Saturday morning, and she was at Swedish, or a center near Swedish, and, you know, I pulled into the, up to the hospital, there wasn't any parking, so I, you know, I pulled into the neighborhood, and, you know, this guy walked out, you know, he has no shirt on, and he's smoking a cigarette, and, you know, and he's like, would you mind not parking there, because, and he wasn't rude or anything, and he's like, would you mind moving, and, you know, and I was just so pleasant. You know, I said, no problem. And he just was like, oh. He's like, give me a hard time. You know, and I just thought, and I, you know, that was, that it just made me feel the good, the way I reacted. Like, you know, it was like, yeah, I don't need to be a jerk to you. You know, that's, and we, my kids and I, we were driving, and we were on the intersection, it was like Quincy and Sheridan, and I can't remember exactly what happened, but somebody did something that wasn't, you know, we were stopped, and somebody did something, and I just remember emphasizing to my kids, not in like a, like, oh, we're really getting angry when people act like that, but it's like, you know, kids, you know, it's, you have to remember to be cognizant of, like, the way you treat other people, you know, and that you're not the only one in this world, and you're not the only one on this road, you know, and so really I've been doing a lot of, and introspection too, like, with myself, and okay, and I really love what you said, a family is a small temple, because it's like, I'm fine with my three children. I don't find hardly any, unless I get up at the crack of dawn, I don't find any quiet time to just sit, or I'll do it after they go to bed. Like, I usually go and sit when I get home from here, because my husband has already put them all to bed, and it's like, oh. So, but I did put a note up on my cabinet. And I have one for exercising. I am like, I love to exercise, and I'm trying to love to sit, but that's something that I have to work on. And it says, make time for yourself to grow and cultivate your compassion, or your grow and cultivate your compassion through sitting. You know, so that's like right up on my kitchen cabinet where I see it all the time. And, you know, so I know it's, Eloise and I were just talking on the phone because she thought she wasn't going to be able to make it. And I said, you know, we love coming here because it's like, oh, it's so calming. It's so calming. And it's like, okay, I can sit and really, sometimes I'm, my mind is really, you know, and other times it's like so, you know, it's so peaceful. And one other thing is, in, you know, I remember reading, like, be mindful of your breath and be appreciative of, like, the chores you get to do every day. Like dishes. So I am more mindful of my breath. And I do try to look at those lovely activities I have on a daily basis as a gift. Most of the time.
Thank you, Mary. I think that's what you say is beautiful. I think once we make time for ourselves, at that time we make time for others also. Mm-hmm. Because you make the space available mm-hmm. in your heart. Mm-hmm. That's why when I was tired and I practice, I know I practice because I make space available for others. Mm-hmm. So if I was to not make time for myself, and in my heart, even I try to make time for all of you, I will. I just pretend to make time for you. Because there is inside, there is no space. How can I fit you in? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So sometimes you just think that, oh, you know, I don't have any time for myself. How can I make time? Mm-hmm. You just say yourself like that. But you didn't know that. Once you make time for yourself, space for yourself, and that time is you also make for your children, for your family. Because inside your heart is empty. And then you can receive them easily. We can interact with them with love. Mm-hmm. So it's important. That's why meditation is important sometimes mm-hmm. in our life, in our everyday life. And Robert, how's your practice? You seem a lot of energy and fresh to me. You seem a lot of more fresh.
Oh. my practice. Mm. This time has been of my life. Very different, and so my mind has not been calm, and so practice is more difficult. I begin to look at why this is in comparison to times before where practice seemed to be more connected and that I could sit for a long period of time before. So actually I feel that I begin again, you know, maybe as a child, maybe even beyond being a child, and looking at what there is to look at. I've been sleeping now for 4 or 5 days, or at night, which is a big plus because I was not sleeping. And so maybe that's why I'm not fresher. you know, I'm in a humble place now, and so maybe new beginning. But not easy. Not easy. So my practice is perhaps more difficult than it ever has been. Crossroads.
Yeah, so I think in our lifetime there is movement of difficulty in every one of us. Like we call crisis, mm-hmm. either family crisis or can be spiritual crisis, because you lost your path, you lost the grip on your family life or can be spiritual life. But I think with the practice, with the patience, this is important with the patience, that's why. And not to give up, you know, there's moment of difficulty, but not to give up our practice. Our practice is a place of refuge for us in our life. You might have many things in life, but might not be a place for you to take refuge. But the practice is a place where you take refuge in the moment of difficulties in life. Once you have that, then you'll be the more you, even though you go into through difficulty, you will get stronger, you strengthen, because you gain some, through the practice, you gain some direct experience in that, some insight, and you have more, develop more confidence. That's what helps you to walk on the path, family path or spiritual path. And then we can overcome that. But we have to take strongly, firmly, take refuge in the practice, in the breathing, in the way that you are, in the nature. Nature is a place that we refresh ourselves and in our heart, because the nature is part of our heart. So we're able to take refuge in that, and you'll be, even though you go up and down, the difficulties in life. But as long as we recognize it, embrace it, and take it as a tool to strengthen your practice, then you don't give up. So today we have been sharing all of our practice. I think that's more proofful. Everyone share, and we learned from each other. We have we go through similar difficulties, maybe more a little bit different in each other, but there's also similarities in our difficulties. So then we can see that every one of us have some difficulties, but it's okay. That's life, you know. Myself, I have difficulties too, but it doesn't mean that I give up. You know, I take it as a tool to strengthen my practice, and it's making it more interesting to look in life. That's what the Buddha enlightened from. He enlightened from the difficulties, the suffering. So we just follow the footsteps of the Buddha, and we investigate into our difficulty. That's where the insight is generated, where the insight is born. Without this difficulty, how can we get insight? You know, how can we get stronger? So today, even though we have like take almost two hours for us to share, but I think it's fruitful. It's effective. It's nourishing every one of us in our practice. That's why we come together as a community, as a group. It's like that. We share. We embrace all our difficulties, and take it as a tool to grow on a spiritual, but at the same time as a family and as a friend on the path. So that's when we come together, we help to each other in that way. So we share to trust each other, because all of us here, we trust each other, that way we share our difficulties, right? We learn to trust each other as friends on the practice path. We don't put doubt in anyone's difficulties. We take it as value. Yeah, value. We take it as a lesson to learn and to make a step together. That's why we have communities, we have groups practice. Because outside, sometimes people challenge each other, you know, of the success or the different things. But we come here, we have nothing. We just share as friendships, as with our experience. We share the truth, because all of us go through something in our life, and we bring it together to make to support each other. That is what the practice is. The practice is to take refuge on each other also. There is bamboo. You see bamboo? They have to grow as family. And sometimes there is storm. But they not uproot, because they grow with each other, the roots together. That's why when we look at bamboo, we look at the trees, many trees, and we learn the lesson. There's something in family. They come and root together, but there's family that root together, but some of their family dysfunction because they don't know how to root. How to root. That's why they uproot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the family is supposed to be to root together, to learn together. That's why I say is the family is a small temple. It's to root together, to learn together. Family always difficulty. No family have no difficulty. You know that. And I live in a family, we have millions of difficulties, you know, if compared to, because we have like, my father have three wives, you see, imagine three wives.
Oh.
And we have three lineage, three children come to, generations come together. And a lot of jealousies, a lot of difficulties, a lot of hatred. But doesn't mean that we cannot grow. But if one person know how to root, bring the family together, bring the family root together. You may have to be a pioneer for the family. I just call my father, and he's happy. And, so we come together here is the spiritual family. Family. But each of you have a family, have a blood family. So you learn and to help each other to build the temple of compassion, the temple of love. His temple is the temple of love, not the temple of hatred, not the temple of resentment. But if we don't know how, and then we can become a temple of resentment, or a temple of hatred, and nobody can able to root, and always strong inside, out, blow up the house, blow up the family. So the Buddha teaches us how to be live in a family, in a temple of family, where there is love, where there is nourishment, where there is insight, because you have a lot of insight in your family. I learned many lessons from my family. I have insight, a lot of insight, when I go through the difficulty in my family. I learn not to hatred, to hate. I learn not to revenge. You can learn. So as a children, as a parents, as a brothers, as a sister, we can nourish each other a lot. So today is, I think it's very fruitful for everyone to share and to share your practice, so I know where you are. And once I know where you are, and then my lecture is easy to fit you. And you know, that's what the teacher or the always contemplated students need, is where the student is. They might not give a high teaching, a very basic teaching, but it's fit to know where the difficulty is, where is the obstacle is, so we can work together. It's more effective. So once again, thanks very much. So I will invite Twisted Bell, and then we